2019 here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are crashing through the airwaves thanks to OldFootballShirts.com. Well, as we rush headlong into the new year, we do so with a haul of 5 points from a possible nine, and we're unbeaten in our festive fixtures. A hard-fought win over Everton and a point at West Ham sets us up nicely for our next two league games against leaders Liverpool and a resurgent Manchester United. First, though, we've got the small matter of Bournemouth in the FA Cup. And although... we are still looking down rather than up, this is an opportunity to go on a decent cup run and maybe, just maybe, win a trophy. Dream up. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. And we're delighted to welcome back two people who've not been in for a while and who've got plenty of stories to tell, and we love them dearly. It's Kay Hutt and John Palfrey.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Happy New Year, everyone. Did we all have a good festive period?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
And Kay, yep. Did you enjoy the football over Christmas?
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Got to see all the games, went to West Ham, all good, all good.
Now, Kay, it's been a while since you've been in. Welcome back, lovely to see you. Seeing as it's been such a while, just remind our listener about your Albion supporting history, your first game and the first time you got to see the Albion.
And your love affair with Bobby Zamora.
And Andy Rowlands.
Yeah, that could take quite a while.
And yeah. Mark McGee.
We only have an hour.
And all of them. My first game happened back in the 70s when Brian Clough became the manager. My dad realised that he was the new manager, and he thought, oh, well, it might be worth going now. So my first ever game was the first game when Cluffy was in charge, which was a very exciting 0-0 draw against York City. but that wasn't enough to put me off, and I've been going pretty much ever since.
And it's been you've been on many marches and many journeys, and it's been it just seems for me I've just been everywhere.
Careful.
Everywhere?
Well, no, I mean, it's like...
Are you accusing of being omnipresent here?
Well, for me, Kay is just what a happy memory of football. It's just like seeing Kay at the football is just something that it's just,
so even a
it's
five,
just meant to be.
We lose 5-0, you see Kay and everything's all right.
Yeah, because she wasn't called Lush for nothing.
I think what you're really saying, AD, is I'm actually quite old and I've been around a long time.
Really hoping he was trying to avoid
you're
saying that.
You're not that old. You're not that old. Yeah.
Well, I'll take it as a compliment. Thank you very much. First one of the new year. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, okay, so we're talking about your first Albion game sort of 45 odd years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So in that time, you've obviously sort of experienced the highs and lows, and John, obviously next to me as well, has, and we'll come to his memories too. But so in all that time, let's start with the good stuff. Who have you got one overarching favourite Albion player in all that time?
Well, probably Bobby Zamora, I would have to say.
At the risk of asking a dumb question, any particular reason why him over sort of other great luminaries?
Well, he's just a great. Great, he's a great guy, and he's a great goal-scoring legend, isn't he? You know, and I just loved it when he came back. Really, I mean, that just shows, I think, what we meant to him. So that was great.
Do you also think that he was like talismanic of bringing better times back to the Albion?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he'd gone to the big clubs, and then we were a big club, if you like, a big enough club for him.
Because when he was in the first period here with us, obviously we'd just come back to Brighton, and we were just finding our way back up after the dark days. Mm. And he just came along, and he was just a breath of fresh air around the place. And he just, his goals brought us arguably to the point of where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'd agree though with that. And I think also he just had a level of skill, I think, that not very many other players have had. They've been great players, but to have that level of footballing skill, I think, is quite unusual.
Kind of cheeky grin.
Yeah, way better than we've ever experienced, even though the fact that, clearly he was playing in the fourth division as a first division quality player, as a top division quality player. Mm. The fact he was doing it for us just made it that little bit, I'm going to use this word, it made it a little bit sexy. We played in an absolute, the first few years at Withdean, played an absolute glue pot. And there's this fella, this sort of scrawny fella that looks like a puff of wind would take him over.
And scoring Van Basten-esque goals.
And scoring some incredible goals, either with his head or his left peg. I mean, it's kind of understandable that, we'd all love this sort of 19-year-old sort of hero.
Yeah.
I quite liked, I think it was Charlie Oakway that was, used to refer to him as like the golden child. And you got that sort of sense of aura about him, I think, that he was sort of special and you had to wrap him up in cotton wool occasionally and he didn't need to train that hard. And very, very special.
But do you have a favourite manager as well in all this time? Apart from Mark McGee.
I don't know. I really quite enjoyed the time when Steve Coppell was there, actually. I just felt it was a really intelligent manager. And you felt like you were in safe hands, I think, with him. And he wasn't going to suddenly throw all his toys out of the pram with a particular player or anything. Everything was very considered. And I really quite enjoyed that time. You know, obviously, he left not under great circumstances. But I enjoyed the time.
Left the top of the league, though.
Yeah, absolutely. True.
John, good to see you, mate. Welcome back to The Raw.
Yeah, nice to be back.
Yeah, I mean, same questions for you, mate. Let's go back to your very first Albion memories. Where do they start?
It started off with my dad deciding that this afternoon, let's go to football. And I'm going, what, really? I just really wanted to sit at home, you know. It wasn't my fault. It was my dad's fault. And we packed the car up, headed off, and went to see us play Walsall.
Okay, and whereabouts were you living at the time?
So, it's still in Worthing.
Okay.
So not the most exciting of journeys, obviously. No. But went to see the game. We lost 3-2, and I was just, by the second half, I was just transfixed with it all. Shouting my head
with
off.
What?
Just the whole atmosphere of the stadium at the time, the colour, the noise in those days. So where are we? 68? Mm-hmm. 68, I think it was. And, I was just totally hooked after that. Couldn't get enough. We, you know, my dad gave me another option. We tried flirting with Portsmouth for a couple of games and just, take me home, Dad. This is horrible, you know. They were a division above us and there was a real atmosphere there, but it wasn't my atmosphere.
All right, so if your dad had taken you to Portsmouth first time round, do you think that love affair might have happened that way round?
There's always that possibility. It was the first game that I saw, and that tends to have an effect on me throughout life. The first German game I saw involved Schalke, and that's its own story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and you're a regular at games all over Europe, actually, aren't you? I mean, you were just in Holland recently, weren't you?
I suspect it's going to come to a crushing end very soon.
Well, but yeah.
But I mean, you were just in Holland over just before Christmas, was it?
Yeah, yes. I went over, rather than go to Amsterdam, I thought I'd take advantage of the new Eurostar service. And basically, you know, one train between, one train from Worthing, change trains, and then you're in Amsterdam without a flight. I just found that amazing. Even now, my excitement was up there. Jump on a train in London, be in Amsterdam in 3.5 hours. Me being me, yeah, all right, that's that. Out the back and off to Leeuwarden in Friesland, which is a wonderful little town full of some cracking little bars, one or two coffee shops, some rock bars. It was really, really an interesting place to
John,
be.
John, you really should do a travel log on here. This is
I'm
transfixed already.
I have my own blog there, guys, but I haven't written up about that.
It just sounded like you're like narrating an audio book there for a while. And I'm transfixed. I'm there. So I mean, tell me about the beer. Tell me about the coffee. Tell me about the rock bars.
I think everyone should start calling him Alan Vicker now.
Okay, let's move on because we've got some games to talk about as well, and let's talk about Everton and not my journey back afterwards, which was...
Are you going to go on? Right, now you've mentioned it. I mean, now you've mentioned
we
it.
We have to know.
I mean, talk about sort of fishing for, you know, tell us about how bad your...
What could possibly go
wrong?
I was going back up to... Well, I was going up to the Outlaws in Chester for New Year. So I legged it on the final whistle. Yes, I know. I stayed till the final whistle. Who knew? And I legged it, got on the train, and I got on a train back up to London. And it was just me, some Everton fans, and a bottle of tequila. So what could possibly go wrong?
Oh dear.
Did you start singing that particular song?
You know what? I think I did.
You utter mess.
Him, but yeah. There, and others. But
well, let's talk about the footy instead, shall
we? Let's talk about the footy. And there was three changes to the draw against Arsenal, and David Button got the nod to replace Asia-bound Matty Ryan. Lewis Dunk returned from suspension, and Florin Andoni was preferred to Glenn Murray. Everton had the best of the opening exchanges, but I mean, it was a good game all in all.
I was quite impressed with the way that you know, they're sort of their names, the Richarlisons of this world, you know, were actually kept pretty damn quiet. You know, I mean, you know, Dale Stevens did his job there, and I was expecting him to sort of rip us to pieces, but he didn't. You know, when he wasn't crying and throwing his toys out the pram, which was quite entertaining.
Well, yeah, we're going to come to that bit in a bit, because I mean, that is just ridiculous, really. But I mean, yeah, but I mean, there was a lot of positives about our performance, and there's a couple of maybe downsides. I mean, should we talk about the declining influence of Pascal Gross? For me, this was actually one of his best game of the season so far.
But sadly, that's not saying a great deal, I'm afraid to say.
But I mean, are we seeing? Because obviously we've got this new formation, which is quite exciting to watch. And when you consider we've got more pace to come back into that team with the likes of Izquierdo coming back, Knockhart maybe getting back onto form. You've got other players to come through as well.
I've got to be honest with you. When we've seen Gross play, and when we see Gross and Murray, and let's face it, they've been very good, and they were superb for us last season. It was the assists and the goals and everything like that. But what we had was a particular style of play, and I think that in order to be more creative, we have to have pace. And obviously, during the summer, Chris Hughton bought some pace. We'd bought some pace already. We have March, who is no slouch. Izquierdo is very fast. Andoni, we've seen, can hit the afterburners.
As can Lacardia.
And when you compare them to what Murray and Gross offer, which is some quality, but they've both got treacle feet, and they. It's so noticeable, you know, where sometimes, for instance, I think the point that Kay was making, it was a really good positive game. And as much as the issues that we'd have with Chelsea and Arsenal, where we'd stood off them for far too long and then partway through the game got into them, we actually started that with minute one against Everton. And I think we made Everton look poor. And in so doing, certainly matched them. Now, Everton are kind of a mid to upper table side. And we were, I think this is where you get to realise that we can match these teams. And we did, and we were. And so therefore, those teams that are well below us, we should, with all due respect, we should now be beating teams like that. If we're on form and they do their job, we should be beating teams like that, because I think that we are now that mid-table Premier League side.
Hashtag teams like Everton.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
But
if you're talking about Gross, then I'm not sure what he can offer some quality as a dead ball person, but if you want movement, pace, yes, he's got an eye for a pass, but if you want those other things, Gross is not your man.
Kay, you grimaced when he said that.
Yeah, well, it's very strange because, he had a good season last season, you know, but apparently he was carrying an injury towards the end of it, and then he got that fixed over the summer.
And then got injured again.
But he doesn't seem to have really quite got up to speed. He used to do passes with his eyes closed virtually. Mm. He'd pick it out and it would be on Murray's head, or it would be, you know, wherever he wanted it to go. And now I don't think the pass rate is as good. I mean, obviously I don't know the stats, but I wouldn't imagine it is.
Well, tellingly, he's not had one assist this season yet.
Well, exactly. You know.
Does he not?
No.
No one's got him in their fantasy team anymore.
I think I have.
I'll tell you what, sorry, just quickly. Yes, he has. Go fast forward to the West Ham game. It was his corner that Duffy scored the second.
Okay. When I was looking at the stats, they obviously haven't updated that yet.
There's a whole change, though, with the team tactics over the last, really, since the Bournemouth game. This is twofold. Firstly, you know, we're more exciting to watch, and I think the players are going to really. It's going to take them a little time to get used to this new formation. Of things, particularly up front, circling around Lacardia, who's being played in the right place now. And all of a sudden, we've started to look dangerous away from home. This is such progress. However, we still don't seem to have the confidence in pulling it off. And I think that will come in time. We just seem to be getting better, particularly the away games, seem to be getting better game by game at the moment.
But it's the speed of a transition, Kay, isn't it? Because the problem is when you've got... it feels wrong to be down on someone like Glenn, who's been fantastic for us, but he just does not have those legs. And you feel that when you've got Florin leading the line, or at least chasing, running, you've got that option to play the ball into the channels to run onto, which you can't. You play the ball to Glenn, and someone has to run off him.
Yeah, but he has other roles as well, doesn't he, Murray? I mean, because his role in defending is quite important. And
of course,
you know, but and I think as John's saying, you know, that it's good to see us attacking a bit more away from home, and perhaps we won't worry so much about that. We'll play Andoni rather than Murray, because we're not thinking about defence the whole time. We're actually going to think about winning this game.
Well, there's also the stat there as well that it's been last year tickets for away games were like gold dust. This year it's been relatively easy, yes, because we've been to most of these grounds already last season, but because of our style of play last season was so dull, and you could pretty much guarantee it was going to be a 2-0 away defeat for us for most games.
And yet, perversely, our record away from home this season is almost, at this point of the season, is almost exactly the same as last season. 1-2, drawn 2, lost 7. But I think what's happening is that whilst the results aren't improving, the scores are. You know, I mean, I know it was the end of the season last season and we got stuffed by Liverpool. The games that we were losing 3-4 last season, we're now losing 1-2. And there's not that many results, many score lines that are getting worse. Probably Everton away is one that sort of springs to mind. But apart from that,
we just hit them on the wrong day. They were fantastic that day.
Yeah,
they were.
And it helped that we were lousy.
Good.
Yeah, and you had the likes. We're talking about Richarlison, shall we? Because I mean, he was.
Can we laugh a lot here, please?
Well, let's. He's an enigma. He's a Solly March. Which we're going to talk about.
No, he's not that bad. He really isn't.
But it's.
I've never seen Solly March just stop and grizzle like that. Kay, go on. You tell our listener what a whinging, whining douchebag he was.
Yeah, he was full on toddler tantrum, really, wasn't it? mainly in the centre circle, so we could all see it as well, which was great, you know. And it just wasn't going his way, and he really didn't like it. In some ways, I quite like that kind of arrogance, you know, that he has, if you like, that he feels like he deserves to have, you know, the pitch at his disposal, you know, and I quite like that kind of arrogance. And I think, you know, maybe that's what makes him a better player than he actually is.
Well, but you just reminded me, do you know those donkeys where you press the side and the donkey collapses?
Yeah,
a bit like that. But he was still a bright spark for him, and he had a couple of chances in there. And Button did actually spill one of those, which was on debut. What did we make of David Button on debut?
He, apart from the spill, I think he's looked pretty solid. I've been very happy with him. I can't help thinking that Ryan might have got the first goal at West Ham, but other than that, I've been very happy with him, and his playing out sometimes seems to be a little better than Ryan.
Yeah, I agree.
You mean he hits the pitch?
Yeah. And by the way, why are Australia in the Asian Cup?
Well,
you've not done the geography here.
Well, here's John Paul's travel log here on Radio River.
Someone tell me in that case, it's a bit like Israel being in Eurovision, isn't it?
Or Australia in Eurovision.
Or Australia in Eurovision.
So Richarlison had that spill, but let's talk about that incident there where he went down and we played on. Let's not forget Everton played on with him down as well in the same move.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was comedy. I think the fact that he also kicked himself rather than being clattered. Now, when you see a prima donna behaving like that, you can't help but thinking it's meat and drink to the likes of Dale Stevens and to Davey Proper, and certainly to someone like, you know, a headbanger like Shane Duffy. You think, if you're going to behave like that, I'm going to kick you into Rose Ed. Maybe I'm just thinking old school here, you know, that sort of brutal bully sort of thing. But if someone's going to behave like that, you're going to get your satchel stamped on. So when he did actually sort of, you know, clatter himself in the centre of the pitch, and David Proper looked like he was shaping to hoof the ball out, and then Solly March of all people saying that I'm going to leg it up the line, and as he gets to the byline, to the goal line, wins the corner, little Bernard, who you know is the only person in history ever to make Solly March look hard, tries to have a go at him. And we get a string of absolutely crystal clear Anglo-Saxon being hollered straight back to him. Mm. That was funnier than Richarlison grizzling.
But I mean, Bernard
lost it at that point. What a stupid way to go.
But Bernard, he just looks like a weaselly Hollywood villain, doesn't he? Like, you know, like one of those really ones you just want to slap. But
Jean-Claude Van Damme's little brother, isn't he?
Yeah, something like that. But it was, you know, it was just as, I mean, I teach my daughter, I tell her the story of the boy who cried wolf all the time, because it's like, you know, it would have been his just desserts if we'd have scored. And, you know, maybe if we had scored, he might not do it again, but...
I mean, it could have been that he was genuinely injured. I don't think that's the issue. Let's face it, he could have been genuinely injured.
It's the ref's job to stop the game.
And it's the ref's job to stop the game, and the ref should only do so properly if it's a head injury. I mean, it just seems to be this kind of protocol that you hoof the ball out because, you know, a fellow professional was injured. But, you know, on other occasions, you just think, I'm not going to. You know, you've gone down one term too many. Mm. You're a whining little, what was it, sort of dummy spitter. Yeah, we're not going to do this for you. And so we play on.
As you said, Everton had the chance to play it out themselves, you know. So, I mean, after that, it's game on as far as I'm concerned.
OK, well, we talked about the change of formation, bringing out the best of some players. Now, the one player who I think has really come a shot in this new change is Davy Purpa.
Totally agree. And it's great because he was sort of being played as another Dale Stevens before. You know, it's like two Dale Stevens, really. And you've always got the impression that he has skills beyond that. You know, he has an eye for a pass. And I think when he plays for the Netherlands, you know, he plays a bit further up front. And he scored some quite good goals and done some good assists and things. You know, and it'd be wonderful if we can see some of that now because of the role he's now playing.
John?
I agree.
Great.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you're talking about all players that have actually improved. When you're saying the change of formation, I mean, I think it's that the formation's largely the same. It's the approach that the midfielders are playing that little bit further forward. And we are actually passing it. Previously, there's been an awful lot of long ball stuff, and it's still happening. But we saw it against West Ham, we saw it to a certain extent against Everton, of the short passes, the reverse passes, and what have you. And I think that what we've got is where you've got someone like Izquierdo, who's more of an out-and-out winger, and where you've had Jakimbac, who's an out-and-out, and March, a knockout for that matter, what you've got now is Jurgen Lacardia, who's finally found his feet. Hooray for that. And we were sang his praises on the show last week. This is someone we've now got to... It's almost like having a new signing, frankly, at the moment. And he's playing as a... I think we called it last week, Sam Baldock Plus. Mm. So he's playing as a forward, a wide forward, rather than an out-and-out winger. He doesn't hug the touchline. Now, that actually then helps the likes of Bernardo to go flying past him when he isn't kicking his own self. And I think that, you know, Bernardo, who has himself an awful lot of skill about him, that there is a similar attitude trying to go happen on the other side. But what you've got more there is, and it's an opinion rather than a fact, is that Solly March can be maddening. And you've also got Martin Montoya can at times be a little bit careless. I've got more faith at the moment in Bernardo and Lacardia to do the business going forward down their side than I have with March and Montoya.
Well,
who incidentally sound like a Formula One team, don't they?
But Brazilian Bernie, our one, not Everton's, he created a fantastic chance for Andoni in this game. I mean, he was fouled on the left-hand side after racing forward. Gross took the free kick, and Pickford proved why he's England's number one, basically, with a fantastic reaction save.
It's great stuff. And the fact is that also the Everton defence was pretty much asleep. So, but yeah, it was a good chance. And move on to the next one.
And Donny's a constant menace. There we go. That's the next one. But then let's just talk about the goal then, because it was...
Sorry, by the way, do you know what me and Andy concocted last week between us in the pub as to what we were going to call Florin Andoni? And this is terrible.
Is it in for a penny, in for a pound?
No, it was 11p. Shall I tell you why? Florin is 10p and one.
That's torturous, isn't it?
Have you considered a career with Christmas cracker jokes?
In for a florin, in for a pound.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say a minute ago. Okay, well, Lucardia did get 2-2. Yes, it was offside, but it wasn't offside. Well, we all celebrate normally he's offside. Then we didn't know initially that the ball bounced off.
You speak for yourself, Sunshine. I saw immediately they'd come off an Everton player. I didn't know which one. I didn't care. It was so clear that it came. There was no Brighton player near it. So, yeah, the first...
Great decision. A brave decision, I feel.
Why do you say brave, John?
Because the lino, the flag had gone up, and it just seemed to me like everybody had stopped and it wasn't being properly celebrated. And I saw the protest going in, but it did seem to be a case of referee overruling the lino. And this day and age, I think that's quite brave. Well, we're on the referees. I don't know, did anybody else spot Mike Dean doing it again last night? Showing a yellow card to a player who didn't even see it. So the player, Huddersfield's player, I've forgotten the name, goes in later
Schindler, on. Schindler, was it?
Yeah, goes in later on with a very solid tackle, gets another yellow card, and he's going, you've only showed me one yellow card. Mm. You know, he didn't even show him the card. He just waves it about, hides it. And again, exactly the same as he did at Bournemouth.
But he normally brands
it with
this
guy
the flourish,
still in
he?
The game?
Yeah, but at all the players, that's the trouble. The flourish means that it's not really directed to a particular player.
Well, worse still with us, it happened that he had the yellow card in his hand and someone knocked it out of it. And so he thought, well, I'll have the other one, then we'll have red instead. So, you know, clueless twerp.
Well, we could always go back to that Middlesbrough game again, couldn't we?
I thought you said we weren't allowed swearing.
Okay, I mean, there was a few other instances. I mean, there was Button tips Richarlison's shot onto the post. I mean, when Richarlison was actually playing football, he was a decent player. I was amazed that they left their best player on the bench, Shane Gilfy, who's just a joy to watch.
Yeah, and that free kick he put in was absolute. That was porn. That was and the header hit the bar.
And the Turkish lad as well, he's quite good.
No, I was talking to Tosin.
Yeah, I was talking to an Everton fan afterwards, and he says, "Oh, well, he's just out of favour at the moment," and he ripped us apart last season. So I wonder what's going on there.
He wasn't scoring goals.
If we're talking about David Button and how well he's playing, let's face it. I mean, I know that we're actually in the middle of a season, but for all those that are worried, he's made a better start to his Brighton career than Matty Ryan did. Because let's face it, when Matty Ryan, he played against Atletico Madrid and then he played against Man City, a couple of drops, is even the game against Leicester. It took a while for him to get motoring into place. Now, you've got Ben Roberts and you know, as the goalkeeping coach. You've got Matty Ryan and therefore Button and Steele together. You know, between them. And we said this on the show. You know full well that whatever their foibles were before they joined us, Ben Roberts would have actually got rid of a lot of their mistakes. And but for a couple of dropsies, which maybe you could put down to nerves, I think we should all be quite happy with David Button.
Oh, right, I'm thinking he hasn't played for a year at this level.
No, he's never played.
He's never played. He's played for 13 clubs. That was his Premier League debut.
I think I'm really confident that he is going to do such a good job. Matty Ryan might struggle to get back in.
Wow, that's a big play.
Wow, that is a big, I can't see that.
I just had this feeling that he's really going to do us proud.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was just to add to what you were saying there, Al. I mean, the situation with them is, and with Ben Roberts is, Ben had worked with both of them before and he wanted them here. So whatever happened at whatever clubs they've been at before, Ben wanted them here. And if Ben wanted them, that's good enough for me.
And you think how much howling Sunderland fans put in saying, what do Brighton think they're playing at, taking him, he's rubbish. We're talking about Jason Steele here. Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, I'll take Ben Roberts' word over it than, you know, that lot till they die.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. In fact, now, if you want to, you can actually, if you've got a smart speaker at home, you can just say, play Radio Reverb, and there's Radio Reverb. It's
you can do that on Alexa as well.
That is a smart speaker.
Is that what it is? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, the other brands are available, you know.
Now that I have a job, we have Alexa at work, and Alexa has never heard of Northern Soul, so those things are rubbish.
You have to train her, probably.
Are they? But we are delighted to be brought to you in association with the absolutely brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil's given me an interesting shirt, which I'm just going to pass over the K to have a look at for me now.
Oh, it's got a word.
Have you been speaking to Phil? Because this is like only about a paragraph today.
No, not at all. No, I've received the shirt of the week, but I didn't read it. So,
This is a white shirt with what appears to be cow,
Frisian
black
cow, yeah,
dots all over it.
It's also got a word that's horribly like palace written on it, which is
What does that say in the middle there?
Gomez Palacio Durango.
Okay, which is a sponsor. Can you read the badge at all? No.
In a word, no. But that's okay. Down to the quality of the photocopying, not my eyesight, obviously.
Okay, so basically, I mean,
about a dodgy chicken shop, isn't it?
Yeah, I think John has basically described it. It looks like a cow, a Friesian cow.
It does.
So northern Germany, maybe? So
no, it
is. Is it from John's travels recently to Leuven?
I'm thinking it would do one of the teams up there proud. Actually, you know, just get a little heart in the middle of it.
It is from John's. It is a shirt from something of John's travels, but not that recently. Although I know you've been around this country, John.
Speak. Where's this shirt?
This is the away shirt of Mexican side, Atlético Lagunero. I'm not quite sure of the season, but it will be before 2017, as that is the year they went out of business after just 20 years in existence.
Where does he get these from? Does he actually buy them, or does he have some?
No, genuinely, people from that neck of the woods, they'll have that shirt and they post it on there. That's how old that.
Him.
No, they post the picture.
And they post the picture.
It's a gallery. How many times have we listened on this show that this is an online gallery?
He doesn't own a warehouse full of shirts.
No. That's not what his missus says.
Louise, they actually did build an extension just to house his football shirts, didn't they? Yes. Yeah, so, no, this is an online gallery. People take photos of their football shirts. And
over 96,000.
Wow.
Yes. So while you were in the Netherlands, at the very least, you should have taken a picture of the various shirts.
I did.
And posted them on there.
I didn't. I just sent it straight to him. I mean, I'm sure the reader knows it, mate. Probably doesn't, but the Heerenveen shirt is actually quite unique. Blue and white stripes with little red hearts across it. Which represents the Frisian flag.
Oh, Frisian. Actually, John didn't even know you were... Phil didn't even know you were coming on today, so there you go.
I was very excited when I went there, because they had the Fries Museum.
Ah.
Right.
But there wasn't a chip to be had.
Anyway, Atlético Lagunero, they were founded in 1997, and they were known as Los Lacheros, which translates as the Dairy Farmers. And they played at the Unidad Deportiva, the Lerdo Stadium in the city of Lerdo in the centre of Mexico. Their final season was in the Seguridad Division, which is the third level of football in Mexico, in which they finished the season in 15th before going out of business, basically.
They ran out of milk.
They ran out of milk.
Yeah.
So there we go. So that is that. So, John, why did you ask for a Crystal Palace towel for Christmas?
This is my Christmas wish list, and this year I wished for Crystal Palace. There,
contagious.
Crystal Palace beach towel. The reason, quite simply, I have a bidet. You can work the rest of it out.
Is this in your new bathroom, John?
Crystal bidet.
I think no one else is obviously going to touch it, so it's going to have one very specific reason. So there you go.
Now, before we get
online, it's sold out.
What? Good grief. Now,
those sons of beaches.
Before we move on to West Ham, you have, you decided to do some research. I mean, I think you're probably the first guest to do some research before you come on the show for Yonks. Now, you were talking about the song that Everton come out to.
Yeah, that's, well, you know the Zed Car song, obviously, but before that, there's a big old blast of it's a grand old team to play for, etc., etc. And I thought, well, that's a bit odd because that's a traditional Glasgow Celtic song. So I wondered how that comes about. So the research that I did told me that it's not actually a Glasgow Celtic song at all. It's actually a Belfast Celtic song. So it's a huge amount of history, obviously, behind that song. How it ties up to Everton, though, still a question on that one.
Right, so if anyone out there cares, let John know.
Well, I know there might be some Toffee fans listening today who I might have met after a bottle of tequila.
Yes.
But,
hang on.
They're
hang
turned
on.
Off by now.
I was about to say, they spoke to you and they're still listening.
Yeah, possibly,
okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, I mean, here we are. We're at the cusp of, you know, another footballing year. We've got a few things to look forward to sporting wise, not just football, but you know, obviously we've got the Nations League that England have sort of managed to mossy their way to. But here we are, you know, four months out from the end of the season. So we're just over halfway through. How do you feel the club has done so far this season, and are you confident that we can stay up? Question to both here.
From my point of view, I'm very confident that they stay up. I mean, I was checking the odds yesterday. We are now 50-1, folks, to go down, which I think is a record. I don't think we've ever been that far away. I think we are driving to the wonderful goal of mid-table mediocrity, which in the Premiership, it seems to me you've got your top six, you've got your bottom six, and everybody else in between. And we're progressing almost by the game, settling in very nicely into one of those mid-table slots, as I think has been said before. A nice cup run there, maybe. Well,
yeah, I mean, Kay, I mean, none of the media outlets, they, when they were doing their pre-season predictions, they all thought we're going to be okay. I mean, I've got some stats here, actually. I mean, it was after 21 games last year, we were 4 points worse off, but a position higher.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm very confident that we'll be fine. There are definitely two teams worse than us. and who sort of remains to be seen which one's going to be the third one, I think. I mean, I think Fulham and Huddersfield are going to keep going down. I'm optimistic and I'm quite pleased. I think we're doing it in the right way. We're improving, but we're not just chucking money at a big player or whatever. We're doing it in the right way, sort of slowly. And that kind of feels very sustainable to me, you know.
Yeah, I mean... Talking of which, you're talking about not chucking money at a big player. I mean, by the sounds of things, we're not actually in the market for anyone new, are we?
Well, no. We've missed out on the guy who's gone to Bournemouth. What's his name?
Solanke.
Yeah.
Oh, has he gone to Bournemouth?
Bought by Bournemouth, yeah, today. Oh, they've paid money for him. Big money. Well, big money for us, it would be. So, yeah.
I wasn't particularly bothered about that one anyway. Although he is a young English talent, and when he went to Liverpool, you know, he'd been at Chelsea before that. So, I mean, you know, that'll be a good signing for PLB. But it's
because we've also offloaded a couple of players today, or you know, last couple of days.
Jordan McGuire Drew's been sold after being tipped to be the next
sold
big
slash game. Given away. But
no,
yes,
no, he was actually sold.
Was he? Yeah, some money for him.
So he's gone to Orient. Ben Barkley's gone to Notts County. Ben White,
that's loan though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's loan. Ben White has gone on loan to Peterborough.
Yes,
who are flying high in League One, so that's a progression for him. Robert,
I've just cut in there. But also shows that those two will not be playing in the FA Cup, which means that Houghton's going to put out a stronger team possibly than we considered.
Well, it looks like, I mean, another player that we might have forgotten that we signed at the beginning of the year was Dan Byrne.
I suspect he'll play again.
And he's available, and I suspect he will be playing.
Has he played in the Cup for Wigan?
No, apparently not, no.
Right.
I'm worried about him. I've been watching some of his performances.
Well, he's good at scoring own goals against a Brighton goalkeeper.
Yeah. I'm worried about him.
But I mean, just looking at the season comparisons here, I mean, amazingly, last year we had scored 15 goals at this point. We've already scored 24 at this point. Last year we only had 9 goal scorers in the league all season. This year we've already had 11.
Wow, that's good stuff, including the defenders.
Yes.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Shane Duffy's the second top scorer.
Yes, he is, yeah.
Wow.
He scored more goals than Zaha, apparently.
Yeah, so,
and got more assists.
Yeah, he's got...
has fallen over a lot less.
We've got three players on two goals, actually. So, I mean, can you name the 11?
This could take a while. Well, Murray.
Yeah.
Ob. Duffy scored.
4 times.
Yes. Dunk has scored.
Twice.
So, Stevens has now scored.
Stevens. Once.
Has March scored yet?
Yes.
March. Right, that's 5. I don't want to spend all night editing this. Who are the rest?
Andoni.
Yeah.
Lacardia.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
Balogun,
Gross, Kyle, and Knockup.
Who did Kyle score against?
Newcastle.
Yes, he did. Well, sort of.
And Knockup got the 19th-minute consolation against Spurs. So there you go. So I mean, that's a positive that we've actually, because I mean, we were talking for more goals from around the pitch. Mm. I mean, it's still a question mark about when.
I'd love to see when Purpose scores.
That's exactly what I was going to say, and I think it will be a worldie when he does. But it will be.
No, actually, let's go for a wild prediction here. Then just our 2019 prediction. If Purpose scores, what sort of goal would it be? Kay, you go first.
Well, I'd love it to be a quality strike, really. I mean, this is the thing I've really miss at the moment about our team, and I think if we could buy a player, it would be great. Is when we have a free kick on the edge of the box, you never think, it's going straight in. And I haven't thought that for ages. I mean, in a David Lopez against Palace kind of way, you know, we just don't have anyone who does that. I mean,
yes, we do.
Do we? Well, they're not doing it.
But Bissouma, but he's not allowed to take the free kicks.
Well, he has,
and Pascal Gross is capable of doing that as well.
But he has taken some and he hasn't done it. I know he did that one. Was it in a friendly?
Yeah, pre-season he did, yeah.
But he has taken a couple since then and it's gone into the stand, you know. So that's probably why he's been removed from that. But.
Well, to be honest, anyone in the Brighton team who takes a free kick, I mean, it is actually fairly standard that we'll go into the stand, yeah.
Maybe if they aim for the stand, it might go in the goal.
Well, yeah. John, do you reckon Purple will score before the end of the season?
Yes, I do. I can see a nice, perfectly accurate smash from outside of the area. So a nice 30-yarder from outside of the area.
I can see it being one of those sort of tight 1-2s that gets, you know, sort of a little swap between, you know, he runs onto a ball from, you know, that he's done a 1-2 with, almost like a kind of a tighter version of the Izquierdo goal against Stoke. So, you know, sort of a really good one, and here we then just sort of
a ping,
it
ping,
past.
Ping.
Yeah. What do you reckon? Or do you reckon it's going to be one of those that comes off his backside?
Well, don't forget, he nearly scored a diving header from outside the box last season, which hit the post. But that was early doors, and you just can't, like, this guy's never going to score. Right. But I'll take anything. Once he gets one, I think he'll go on and get 4 or 5. But,
really?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's just like a mental block at the
moment.
It's
interesting that we're all talking about Proper, because we can all see in the last 3 or 4 games he's actually probably been man of the match in each and every one of them.
Yeah, he's been absolutely magnificent.
Well, we've had so many new players come into the squad since the summer. You know, it's difficult for players to work with each other, etc. With so many changes, and again, having this new change in tactics as well, you know, it's difficult for them. But the more they get to play together, particularly under this new tactic, and I think that we will really start to see the results.
Well, okay, I mean, there were question marks over some of the signings, but we very rarely do sign dud players with the current recruitment setup. I mean, there was a lot of question marks over Lacardia, but if you put a square peg in a square hole, look what happens. And, you know, there was talk of a possible change of formation. And when we were discussing the show we had before, remember, about we thought that possibly we might be looking at going 3 at the back and playing Andoni and Lacardia.
You keep saying that. There's still no hint of that. It's just an idea you're coming up with. We don't have enough defenders at the club to do that.
Yeah, we have. It's not fit. and we've loaned the others out. But now we've got Dan Byrne coming. Then yes, we have.
Well, and then he's got to get used to playing a 3 if he's not used to doing it. So it's although it might be an idea and what have you, but yeah, and I know you like the idea because it sits well on paper. But, you know, let's see it happen first. Let's say, as John said, as Kay has already said, we've changed our setup, our tactics, our formation a wee bit to actually then do it again. And something which is as radical as going 5 at the back is actually, I think, something that I'd be astonished if it happened this season. It's something that you work on for a few weeks in pre-season.
Well, we don't know what they're doing in training, so maybe they are. But. Yeah. Okay, John, let's talk about... it was Wednesday night, wasn't it? I've lost track.
Yes, it was indeed.
You wanted to talk about the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah, I know everybody says it's got awful views, etc. I was very disappointed again with the views. I mean, you can see pretty much the halfway line, and then beyond that you're kind of drifting towards looking at the diamond vision rather than what's going on the pitch. It's ridiculous. You look around the stadium, these gaping great gaps that they simply cannot fill in because the fact it was an athletics track. Yes, once they got scoring, we could hear that there was a bit of an atmosphere coming up. But the old school West Ham fans must be devastated at this. They've lost a national asset from that stadium. I would have put a World Heritage Order on it. It was a magnificent stadium. It was so intimidating. I was explaining to our kids this morning that, you know, how disappointing it was to come home from a game like that and not have felt fear, because you did at West Ham, particularly if you'd got the result there and you're dodging out the way of the coins and everything else that's coming at you. And fair play to them. It was a lovely part of old East London, and it's gone. you know, you're not going to be getting jelly deals around that stadium, for God's sake. So what are these guys doing? I'd love to know. Have they followed them on? Have they left football altogether? Are they watching non-league teams? Sneaked off to watch Dulwich Hipster? Who knows? I just... it's just a loss of an asset. They must be devastated.
But, I mean, I think a lot of them are still there. Right. But it's the same situation as we had when we moved into the Amex, where... with Dean, to be honest, we didn't have.
You cannot compare and contrast Ham moving to the Olympic Stadium with us.
I'm saying is when you move to a new stadium, basically the groups of people that like especially when you're the old school terracing and everything, it's everyone that's congregated together in. For want of a better phrase, a singing section.
Yeah.
All of those people will now be dissipated around the stadium in various different pockets.
Well, we didn't really have that, because don't forget, before the stadium opened, we had the choice of everyone wanted to. I mean, you know, there was a group of our friends, there were 69 of them together. So I don't think I'd necessarily go for that. Yes, you are miles away. You can't go from the West Stand to the North Stand during the game. So, you know, not that you could have with Dean or anything like that, but, you know, you felt that there was always an opportunity. And on other grounds, you can go from sort of one area to another. So you've got that. But don't forget, the Amex, in the form that it was something that we actually all craved. No one asked the West Ham fans as to whether they wanted to go to the Olympic Stadium, irrespective of the fact that, you know, the stadium design is totally wrong. The sight lines are not, as John said, the sight lines are not great. Once you get an atmosphere going, it's an incredible place, but it takes so long to get. It's like only having gears four and five. There's no sort of ramp up to making a big noise. Yeah. Plus the fact that, and I think it's going to have an effect that when you have this kind of symbiotic relationship of players playing well, which increases the crowd noise, which makes the players play better, which increases, and so on and so forth. If these things are not happening, both things aren't firing all cylinders. The West Ham players for the past couple of seasons have not been playing brilliantly. And West Ham are a bunch of moaners at times. And when, you know, where we were in the press box and nearer to the West Ham fans, they really like a good moan. You know, because with all due respect, they should be #, beating teams like Brighton, you know. So,
but Kate, I mean, were you lucky enough to actually get any tickets for any of the Olympic stuff there?
No, it's my first time, and I mean, as a stadium, it's a great stadium, but I would be absolutely gutted if we ended up playing in a stadium like that, because it's like going to watch football at the O2, basically. You know, it's all super kind of, you know, access points and catering opportunities and all that kind of thing, but it is soulless. And as I was walking into the ground, like a West Ham fan sort of more or less said to me, "Oh, this is such a asshole," you know. They did moan, you know, and it was almost like he wanted to apologise for being there, you know. And I feel gutted for them, really, because I would be gutted if we were playing there. And it sounds sort of churlish to say that about what is actually a very good stadium, but it's not a football stadium.
But I mean, John, you've been to Olympic stadiums around the world to watch football. I mean, how does it compare to those other ones, like the Olympic Stadium in Munich, for argument's sake?
The Olympic Stadium in Munich always had a very good design to it, and it always had the atmosphere there as well. I think probably the Olympic Stadium in Rome would probably be a better comparison. Mm. That can get, I wouldn't say soulless for a moment, but again, the sight lines are all wrong. You know, that was built very much as an athletic stadium. I was actually there on Golden Saturday, and watching Jessica Strutter's stuff, and it was amazing. The whole atmosphere there was wonderful, but you just simply cannot translate that back into a football club. It just felt like it wasn't West Ham, it was another club. You know, it's almost like they've gone away and started again. Maybe they should call them Thames Ironworks. Start all over.
Okay, I mean, let's talk about the game then. There's one change from the side to beat Everton, with Murray coming in for Andoni. I thought we were very comfortable in the game, and particularly in the first half. I mean, they had chances, West Ham, and they've got some very, very good players. But, I mean, the first half, it would just look very, very comfortable.
I thought both teams looked really leggy. There was mistakes all over the pitch.
Is that a Christmas hangover?
Well,
a lot of games in a short period of time.
There is that. There is a touch of that. You could see that Brighton were trying to play their passing thing, and it just wasn't working. I mean, it was just more that they were being careless. But West Ham were doing exactly the same. I think the best chance that West Ham had was basically Montoya just hanging out his leg to clear the ball about 5 yards before it was smacked straight back at Button. Thankfully it was, because it was a horrific mistake by Montoya. But yeah, there was passes were going astray from both sides from a neutral's point of view. And actually, you know, sitting in the press box as well, and you have to sit on your hands a little bit. You can't get too excited. The first half was so dull.
No problem there.
I thought it was interesting because I thought West Ham came out sort of almost as like they were nervous. They were carrying the...
They were there for the taking.
Well, yeah, we've just been beaten by Burnley,
haven't they? So.
Well, and also you've beaten us three times, you know. So they looked nervous. But we didn't play like a team that had just beaten them three times, you know, the last three times we played. And that was the problem. So they were there for the taking. They weren't confident. They were, you know, passing it about and not really doing very much. But we could have absolutely steamrolled them, and we just didn't.
Do you think? I mean, this is just like a weird question, probably. But I mean,
no.
Do you think that I mean we wore the yellow shirt just maybe over mind over matter? Because technically, we're only meant to wear it once this season, and we seem to have worn it four or five times in a row now.
The main thing with that is that because the green kit I think clashes with white shorts, and West Ham were wearing white shorts, weren't they? And there isn't actually a green shorts equivalent, so I can imagine that now that the yellow shirt has become. But I can't believe that anyone's actually going to think that it's because we're wearing yellow rather than green or anything like that. I cannot buy into that at all. Well, that team knows
psychologically. Psychologically.
Yeah.
It reminded me of last year. I mean, I didn't go. I saw it on the telly. I didn't actually go to the ground last year, but it did remind me that hey, you know. But we were lacking Izquierdo. I mean, you know.
There was no worldie from them. Yeah. They were better off because they didn't have Joe Hart. But yeah, I mean, the first half was dire. It was poor stuff, and I'd say, and we're sorry to zero in on him again, but again, the quality from Pascal Gross just wasn't there. The willing was there, you know. Everyone was getting into the game, but it's just that there was such poor. It was a championship game, frankly.
There were some bright spots in there. I'm
talking about the first half, basically. Yeah, I mean, second half was obviously a lot better.
But. I mean, you could tell. I mean, Arnautovic looked like a fantastic player, and there was.
Where last year he was absolutely diabolical. Yeah.
But I mean, he could have had a penalty in the first half.
Oh yes, yeah, it was very clumsy. I mean, again, we get to see the replays, and yeah, it was very clumsy.
But my viewpoint on that, I'm going to agree slightly with the referee on this, in the fact that I mean, looking at it from certain angles, you can see that Lewis has got his arms around him, and technically, I'm going to file it under seen them given, but
which is a meaningless phrase,
but you
by
had
way.
You had Arnautovic had the ball in front of him, and he stopped. And looking for the penalty, so
there is a touch of that as well.
So why didn't he actually give himself a chance to score a goal? And then
because I think he was so wide, he wasn't going to get his shot away. So he was waiting for. Glenn Murray does it. He was waiting for the tackle, waiting for the challenge, waiting for anyone to, you know. I felt he did go down a little bit easily. Mm. He could have stayed on his feet. But having said that, Lewis Dunk, you know, he did sort of like career into him a little bit. So and it is one of those that anywhere else on the pitch, to be honest, I think we dodged a bullet on that one.
Another player who dipped in and out of the game, but when he was it, and again it was a West Ham player, was Anderson, and they had that magnificent run where he just skipped through our lines and just fizzed a shot wide.
I was expecting the net to bulge there.
But then a poor cross from Jurgen Lacardia wins us a corner. And Al, do you want to talk us through it?
I can't remember the cross from Lacardia, but I do remember the corner. And it just occurred to me, I'm thinking, well, actually, we're not too bad at corners this year. I mean, what clearly had happened last year was that it was a case of, right, aim for Duffy or aim for Dunk, you know, and they'll win the header, especially Duffy, he'll win anything. But it was a pair of them were 50p heads, and the ball would just go into the stand, it'll go straight to the keeper, it'll just go miles wide. It was hopeless. So I think even Chris Hughton realised it's not worth doing it because they cannot direct the header on target. So they've actually been a little bit more creative, especially where one of them will go flying round to the back post in order to knock it back in. And from there, it's anyone's ball. We did it, for instance, the classic example, I think, is last year against Arsenal, but we've done it a couple of other times since. Now, similar thing happened. Ball gets played back. Actually, no, tell a lie. They were aiming for him, but I think that the keeper got a punch or it was cleared. And it was actually a really good finish from Dale Stevens. I mean, when you see the picture, any pictures of the shot, his body is at such a weird angle. Just about every single limb seems to have been broken in order to actually sort of achieve the body shape that he did. But in doing so, managed to keep it down and knock it into the back of the net. 2 minutes later, West Ham just as asleep at the corner, and Gross gets his.
But, I mean, these corner routines, Kay. I mean, it looks like we've borrowed Gareth Southgate's bus stop.
Yeah, not it's his. What is it? The Soul Train thing.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Maybe. No, I mean, not quite. But I mean, I was very. To be honest, it was up the other end. You know, I mean, as we've just discussed, you know, you couldn't really see an awful lot. So I'm slightly commenting on what I saw on the telly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was very impressed with Shane Duffy's little sort of back heel into the goal.
How do you describe that goal?
That was a magnificent strike. It just seemed to come out of nowhere. Yeah. You know, what are you doing?
This is Duffy's one.
It was the outside of his foot, kind of volley. It was a volley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Back heel volley.
Yeah.
But I mean, Duffy player of the season for you so far?
Ooh, there's a question. Well, obviously he's missed a few games. Yeah. I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah. Okay, John?
Player of the season so far.
You'll have to get back to him on that one.
The whole team.
He'll be in the reckoning. I suspect he'll, you know, come the vote at the end of the season, I genuinely suspect he'll be in the top three. But as we discussed with Player of 2018, for me, it's still actually the fellow who hasn't had a gammy game yet. And actually, in the last couple of games, hasn't had a game at all. I still think it's Matty Ryan.
So, like, 60 minutes gone, 2-0 up. Trying to see the game out. Didn't happen.
Well, actually, you say we're trying to see the game out. Bernardo had a really good... he managed to get past the right-back who just sort of... almost like a computer game. He just sort of vanished into thin air. You think, how did he get through him? And he was genuinely one-on-one with the keeper and he belted it straight at him. If we went 3-0 up, then I think it's game over. But he didn't, and 2-0 is still a dangerous scoreline.
What should he have done with that?
Yeah. It was genius subs, really, I think, you know, obviously, because, you know, they both came up with the assists and it just changed the game, and they didn't seem to have that baggage of the rest of the game. They'd come on fresh.
Yeah, and he just absolutely beat it. I mean, there is controversy over that goal as well. I mean, next year with VAR, would that have been given? Would it not? I mean, it's still non-conclusive whether the hole of the ball was over the hole of the line. But
well, the VAR, the goal line technology only counts for the goal line within the goal. Now, I'm just wondering if the technology can work that it's actually the whole of the goal line. And actually, for that matter, for the whole of the touchline. Is that worth doing? I don't know. Probably not. But, yeah, I mean, if it's one of those that if the goal line technology did look... It's a bit like the Liverpool-Man City game and the chance that Liverpool had. And they, you know, the ball was all of the ball was over with the exception of the last sort of 3 millimetres. Mm. I suspect it's probably a similar thing to that. First thing I thought was, when I saw it, at the time, I thought, well, that was clearly out because I'm in the press box. You're further round from where the Brighton fans are, and then you see the replay and it stops there, and you think, well, you could certainly perfectly understand if the linesman had given it, but if it's all the ball over all the line, probably on balance. I mean, it's a real stinker, but it's probably about right.
I don't think anybody was even protesting around me. I didn't think about it at the time.
Well, I'm inserting the John McEnroe clause, and I'm saying the ball was out. But but on that note, that's all we've got time for, believe it or not. So I mean, we would have all taken a point before the game, really, us away from home. But we are getting better away from home, and long may that continue into New Year and onwards and upwards. And but thank you just to Kay Hutt, thank you to John Palfrey, thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham, and I think we look better in yellow. See you later. Bye. I think that you look good with your hair down. I never liked it tied back. Tell me why you walk around with your head bowed. You're not the kind to blend into the crowd. And I think that you look better in yellow. Girl of the future. Black doesn't suit you. And I hope it's not to do with your fellow. Why you've painted your eyelids black and thrown out all your clothes. And I think that you look better in yellow. I think that you look better in yellow. Oh, I think that you look better in yellow. Just so you know. Girl, I think you're losing yourself.
senses, always sounding pretentious. Does it work to try and be someone else? It seems a lot of effort to justify yourself. And I think that you look better in yellow. I think that you look better in yellow. Oh, I think that you look better in yellow. Just so you know. Creasing, but the joke wasn't pleasing. Forgive me, love, but this just ain't you. Don't think so hard about the way that you move. I'm a friend to you.